Bill.
Do you have any time right after this?
Actually, I'm here for Jerry. Perfect. Yeah, you are right. Thank you.
Those two highways, yeah. Yeah, there might be a lot of discussion after the meeting.
Yeah, I can.
So we had a meeting with Thurston County Law Enforcement weekend, one of the ones we saw. I talked to them, so they're part of the Thurston County Speed Project. We're implementing from here.
Not today.
It's mostly in woods and signage.
Okay.
They're getting done.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I'm not describing.
So I was talking to Darren, I think you guys.
Yeah.
Got an agenda.
Yeah.
Traffic.
They always.
As a result of kind of that conversation, or is that just kind of status quo stuff that you're worried about?
This is a growing deal.
Okay.
So we've got five or six different things we've done around the state.
Yeah.
We've got some.
And those are all to do with same thing.
All to do with trying to bring some space.
Okay, all right. We need John at your time, our speed program. The pilot project. Great. Let's do.
And our secretary very interested.
Yes, right.
Lots of some other. That's always good.
Kind of different approaches to other states.
Good. Awesome. Yeah, we haven't. I think Jonna probably has a better grip on that, but she hasn't been in the front of my mind. But yeah, we can always learn.
Hey, how are
you?
Steel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Okay.
Oh, it's an interesting ratchet.
My feet hurt.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Are you good? How's the drive over?
It's live.
Live?
I drove to Mount Vernon. I spoke live.
That's nice. No fog in Spokane to see us?
Nope.
Yeah, those are the years he's circled.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have needed him any other day this year. I was riding my bike yesterday and I don't always bring my rain gear, but there was just enough of a chance that I tapped it. And it was a really good thing. By the time I was heading back, it was a lot of it. I scared myself. And I was just so really miserable. That's why he left.
As long as they're performing now.
We were gonna send an APB out for you.
We were just sending one of the chief's guys.
There's a million of them.
Are you guys ready? We have all our meetings.
You're right here. Good, how are you? Transition from one meeting to another.
Yeah.
I would like to call the October meeting of the Washington Traffic Safety Commission to order. It is, for the record, October 16th, 2014, 10:35 or so, give or take a minute or two in the afternoon. So we will go around and do introductions. My name is Sharon Dillon. I'm the Sketch County Commissioner, and I represent the 39 counties in Washington State. John, go your way.
John Snyder, Spokane City Council, representing the Association of Washington Cities.
Good morning. My name's Martin Mueller, with the Department of Health and Safety and First Sector Leasing.
Jim Swanger, Clark County District Court, representing judiciary.
Good morning, everyone. John Batiste, Chief of the Washington State Patrol.
Derek Rundell, Director of the Washington Traffic Safety Commission.
Kathy Drew, sitting in for Jerry Nelson.
Alan Jones, Director of Student Transportation at Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction.
John Nesbitt with the Department of Transportation. I'm sitting in for Secretary Peterson.
Scott Waller, I'm pinch hitting temporarily for Kevin Quigley, Secretary of DSHS.
Pat Kohler, Director of Department of Licensing.
And we usually go around the room, so we'll start looking this way.
Steve Austin, Lewis County Sheriff's Office.
Dave Wright, Washington County Traffic Safety Task Force.
Gloria Mansfield Averill, Target Zero Manager in Pierce County. MJ Hodge, Traffic Safety Commission.
Les Watson, Acting Chief of Police, Shelton Police Department. Casey Salisbury, Mason County Sheriff.
Josh Hensbury, Grant County Sheriff's Office.
John Roberts, Chief, West Coast Department.
Rich Smith, Pittsgrass Valley Fire and Rescue.
Anne Riley, Pittsgrass County Community Network Coalition. Jim Smith, Target Zero Manager, Pittsgrass County. Nancy McClendon Walters, Target Zero Manager, Walla Walla. Susie Bradbury, Grace Harbor County Target Zero Manager. Michelle Walter, Pittsgrass County Target Zero Manager. Eric Sitt, Student Zero Manager, Grant County.
Police Department and the Assistant Chief.
Dave Zan's most likely Police Department.
Melody Nelson, Miller County TPM.
Jim Bordy, Bobby County Partisan Manager.
Jerry Navella, Partisan Manager.
Marcia Masters, Target Zero Manager, Kitsap County.
Evelyn Roy, Target Zero Manager, Commissioner Douglas, Miller County.
Mark Brogan, Washington State Patrol. Ron Rupke, Assistant Chief of State Patrol.
Mark McGowan with the Washington Traffic Safety Commission.
Erica Steinman, Washington Traffic Safety Commission.
Angie Ward, Washington Traffic Safety Commission.
Betty Nesbitt, Traffic Safety Commission.
Shelley Baldwin, Traffic Safety Commission.
Yeah, Chris Biddle, also Traffic Safety Commission.
Thank you, everybody. It's a beautiful day. We got Skagit County that was raining, so I appreciate Thurston County's sun. So, I need, if so approved, and everybody's read the minutes for our April and our July meeting, I do need a motion to approve, please. Do we have a quorum? Yes, she missed the first.
We need one more.
Okay, never mind.
So we can move that as soon as we have the quorum, which is right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't think it would be good if I sped over here.
Good idea.
First day. But I did park in an unauthorized spot.
It's just tough this place to find a park.
Department of Corrections.
We have been over and over that with our landlord, and it's been a huge challenge. We fight the healthcare authority across the street, who has multiple parking spots behind the post office and between the railroad tracks. But because of our lovely weather, most people like to park closer to the building. So it's been a challenge. So my apologies for that. So what we'd like to do is we actually like to, you know, block off some spaces when we have these commission meetings, but our landlord's been a little bit. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I have staff that does that too. They have to park close, but then they walk twice a day. Really?
Yeah.
You park farther away, you get your walk in.
Yeah, it's your corporate fitness program.
Exactly. Okay, so now that we do have a quorum, I would love to entertain a motion to approve the minutes for the April and the July 2014.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, it has been moved to second that we approve the minutes for the April and the July 2014 minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Yes. Okay, so local implementation program. Chris?
Thank you. Yeah, that one's good. Well, thank you, commissioners, for the time you've spent understanding this issue. We know you're very busy, and we do appreciate your leadership in helping us work through an issue that has been difficult. You know, when Darren came into this position as the director of the commission, he started asking us as staff some difficult questions. And we appreciate the fact that he gave us the space to create some answers to those questions. This one has certainly taken a lot longer than probably the others, but we thank him for doing that. I also want to just recognize Etika Scala and Angie Ward, who are the program managers, who have poured over the information that we've collected, who have really helped to shape what we're putting forward today. In our proposal. They bring a lot of talent and ability to our work here at the Commission, and I'd be remiss if I didn't recognize them. Finally, I just want to recognize a lot of the local stakeholders that are here today, many of whom have traveled long distances to be here. We know our proposal does not give every stakeholder all that they want, and we considered that. We as staff, so after this February meeting, came back and talked about whether, you know, we should keep things as they are, status quo. Ultimately, the information that we had, that we were looking at, and through our stakeholder meetings, we have decided to continue forward with the proposal that you'll see today. As I mentioned in February, we do believe that there's more than one right answer to the question of how do you effectively and efficiently implement a traffic safety program in the state. We put forward what we thought was a right answer in February, and We are putting forward a different right answer today, and probably one that's better. And ultimately, we believe in the work that's been done behind this, but acknowledging there's more than one right answer to these complex and more qualitative reviews, and ultimately the decisions that come out of them. So, the first couple of slides are just a review of what we're discussing today. I won't spend much time on these, but this is our local implementation program. And when we talk about local implementation, we're really talking about the network of coordinators that we have throughout the state that deliver our programs and projects. We make a distinction between that network of coordinators and the task forces, which are largely coalitions at the county level that come together to help manage and implement those projects. So we're talking right now about the coordinators and particularly the funding that we put into that network of coordinators. So just a review of the forces that are influencing our review. With the, about less than a year ago, we had a new version of the Target Zero Plan that the governor signed into effect. And for us as an agency, we have really looked at how do we align our investments, state and federal, with that plan. We went through an extensive development process. We believe in what the plan mentions and the strategies contained in that plan. And ultimately, we as staff want to ensure that we're aligned well with that plan. We also have, in particularly in local implementation, we have some rising costs to be very attentive to. We have some rising costs for these positions locally, and we're trying ultimately to sustain this program over time. And then we feel increasingly accountable. Results Washington raises the bar for us a little bit in how we're investing these funds and ensuring that we're making the very best investments. We make decisions every day about good investments, better investments, and the best investments. And we as staff really want to ensure that the commission, the federal money that comes to the state through the commission, is focused on those best investments. And so ultimately, those are the things that have led us to our review in the lead up to the February meeting and now today. So just a reminder of how we fund these positions. We do have kind of these two mechanisms right now. One is through FTEs. We have local county or city government agencies that host FTEs. And these government agencies are putting forward some of their own funds to pay for those FTEs. And then we also supplement as well. So that's a real partnership between the local community and the state for the traffic safety efforts that are ongoing in those areas. We also have positions that are contractors, that these are really independent contractors that have agreements. Right now, the way it's structured is they have agreements with the local agency, and then we have a separate agreement with that local agency that serves as a pass-through to those contractors. And in that case, we're funding, the funding for that contractor is almost exclusively WTSC dollars. So those are the two primary mechanisms that we acquire those services. We added this slide just this week, mostly just as a high-level look at how the funding works. We do have a state appropriation every year that comes to us for this work, for coordinator services. It's $668,000 that we dedicate each year to funding the coordinator positions throughout the state. You'll see on the far left, on average between 2010 and 2014, we appropriated an additional $530,000. Now there was a year in there where it was $400,000. There have been 2 years that were right around $600,000. But those costs are in addition, and they come out of the federal money, federal pool of money that we fund all of our traffic safety projects from. So there's very little state money that actually comes to this agency that we use to fund projects aside from our school zone safety account. So most of the projects that we fund come out of that federal pool of money. So here in the middle, that was our February proposal, which was really to try to get that down to the state appropriation. The $90,000 that you see there for the federal money was for the two sort of super regions that we'd created that were mostly focused on coordinating the emphasis campaigns. And now you'll see in the October proposal, what we're putting forward is sort of a balance between those two, where we're taking those two super regions and breaking them up into smaller areas and continuing to invest a fair amount of our discretionary federal traffic safety funding into those coordinator positions. So this is the current structure that we have. We've got 22 coordinator positions that cover 22 counties and the Colville Reservation. And of those 22 positions, we do have two that are vacant right now, and that have been vacant for over a year. That's the Colville Reservation, as well as Skagit County, where Commissioner Dillon's county. I'll also note here, as I did in February, that there are cases where coordinators are covering some neighboring counties, mostly for the DUI and seatbelt enforcement campaigns. So this is the case in Walla Walla, in Chelan, Spokane, Yakima, and Grant. There is some coverage for neighboring counties, particularly for those enforcement campaigns. And just to note that of those 22 now, we have 13 that are locally hosted FTEs and 9 that are contractors. This is the proposal from February where sort of these became the infamous blue and salmon colored regions, and then the county level coordinators were in purple. So we proposed a pretty drastic change to regionalize east and west these areas and primarily focus on that key and centerpiece strategy in Target Zero, which is high visibility enforcement. It's those enforcement campaigns coupled with high publicity for the campaigns that we put on. So following February's meeting, the commission, I think very wisely, asked us to go out to the stakeholders, those that would be impacted by those two super regions, to better communicate what we had proposed, and then to gather impact about what the implications of those changes were. And in complete honesty, I'll tell you that those meetings they got a little difficult at times. One of the things that we mentioned right up front was that we acknowledged that we think we could have gotten things a little bit better in the lead up to the February meeting. There were things that we probably should have done better. We're not professional change agents. That's not our business. It's sort of become our business, but we learned a tremendous amount from those meetings. We learned not only about change, but more importantly, we learned about this program and the local communities and how traffic safety is implemented locally, particularly in those areas that are less populated. So we learned a great deal from those meetings, and ultimately it's what has helped shape our proposal that you see today. We heard repeatedly that the Target Zero plan strategies, many of them are difficult to implement in these less populated areas. So many of those strategies are really geared toward more urban environments where we have more population, you have more driver population, you have potentially less geographic area. So we heard that the local strategies, particularly focused on educational work, are effective, and in some cases more effective than the strategies we have in the Target Zero plan. That was a big takeaway for us from those local communities to say, look, you can't do away with these programs. These are important to us. And in some cases, we think they're more important than the ones that, you know, you trumpet in the plan. One of the takeaways, I think, for us is that the next version of this plan has got to be more attentive to those locations in the state. We've got to do a better job of providing options for less populated areas for effective Target Zero plan strategies that may be difficult to research and measure and even document the results of. But we think we can get there. We think we can accommodate maybe even a more rural section in the plan that's going to help these local communities in the future as they look for more strategies to implement. So this is the proposal that we put forward today. Really, this new proposal is primarily built to recognize sort of a balance between the data that we're looking at, but also the geography of the state. Say the geography presents challenges, the distances that need to be covered. There are important aspects of the geography that we need to account for. So really what we've proposed is discontinuing 5 coordinator positions statewide. Of those positions, 2 are FTEs, and we have one of those that's vacant in Colville. The 3 other positions are contractors contractors, and we're proposing to consolidate in those areas from 2 contractors to a single contractor. And those areas are the Skagit-Whatcom combination up top, the Mason Grays Harbor over just to the west of Thurston County, and then the Kittitas Chelan Douglas area. So those are the places that we propose for regionalization. The Skagit position, as I mentioned, it is vacant at this time. So this is the other slide that we added just as a way to close the loop on the data analysis that we did when we originally put forward the February proposal. We created this composite score that's based off of fatalities, serious injuries, and a measure of exposure that includes driver population and total vehicle miles traveled in the county. That vehicle miles traveled is the primary exposure measure that we use in the world of transportation and traffic safety. So we created this composite score, and the areas in green are where we currently have coordinators. So this is almost exactly like what you saw in February. It shows that composite score and how the counties weigh out. So one of our first tasks was we looked at those counties that were at the lower end of the composite score. We said, okay, which of these are there places where we could look at efficiencies and potential regionalization? We looked at Clallam and Walla Walla very closely, and ultimately in taking into account the fact that both of those areas, Walla Walla and the top of the Olympic Peninsula, are relatively geographically isolated, and the fact that the coordinators in these 2 positions are locally hosted FTEs, which signifies some real local support for this work. We then went to kind of this next tier of counties in Kittitas, Mason, and Cowlitz. And these ultimately were the ones that we looked at how we could regionalize in a way that made sense. Skagit was included in there, particularly because of the vacancy, but also the geography of Whatcom and Skagit, and then the 2 island counties, Island and San Juan. So this, what this table shows is now, this is really based off of the proposal. So you'll see each region creates a composite score. And what you see is more compression, where you have a wider range of scores here. In the proposal, you have more compression. Really, with the exception of the Walla Walla and Clallam Jefferson locations, the compression is fairly drastic. You still have the Keene, the Pierce, the Snohomish at the top that haven't changed, but you see more compression between the Spokane and ultimately the Benton Franklin areas. So we really wanted to just show this to close the loop on that data part and to try and explain some of the process and thinking that went into this proposal. So this gives you a quick look, sort of at a glance look of the 3 proposals. Where we're at today, the February proposal, and then the October proposal. So you can see the top line there talks about the total coordinators in each one of those. In this proposal today, every county is formally adopted into a region. This is important for us. We felt like one of the things coming out early was that we wanted to make sure, whether there was much activity going on or not, we wanted to make sure that there was some formality around each county being included in our efforts in traffic safety. And then you'll see the annual cost of operation. These are approximate values. It does fluctuate a little bit from year to year, but you can see the existing structure is around $1.2 million. The February proposal was that $668 plus the $90,000, which put it right at about $750,000. And then the proposal today would put those costs at about $1 million. So in addition to the $668,000 state appropriation, we'd invest about $330,000 of the federal money into this structure. So just quickly before I wrap up, these last few slides discuss the features of the proposal, and then we'll mention briefly just a procedural issue that we think is important in the consideration of this proposal. The new proposal does break those two super regions really into seven regions. Three on the east side, four on the west. It also formally adopts each county into a region. And for us, it creates more sustainability in the network. We just had, I guess about 3 weeks ago, our longtime Target Zero manager in Snohomish County, Tracy McMillan, who took a different job in the county. She left, and her hosting agency is Human Services in Snohomish County, essentially said, if we have rising costs, and they laid out those costs for us, and said, if you're unable to keep pace with those rising costs, we're going to have to relinquish the position. And ultimately, in looking at their projections of what those FTE costs were, we could not keep pace with that. So right now, we're in the place where we're looking for a host agency. We may have found one in the sheriff's office that may take over that position, but we haven't had a whole lot of discussion with them yet on that. So it's just that just illustrates some of the pressure that we're up against in terms of sustaining this network. These rising local costs are real, and they're an issue for us in terms of, you know, what's the threshold? How much will we invest and continue to invest? And ultimately, are those the best investments for us? So this top bullet gets at one of the things that we felt really good about learning in these stakeholder meetings, which is these local strategies, we have to find some way to account for them. The February proposal really looked at only aligning with the strategies in this plan. But what we want to do is set aside up to a third of coordinator time, particularly in those less populated areas, to focus on those locally led strategies. We think it's a good investment. We think in many cases there's strategies that are difficult to measure, that are difficult to gauge the impact, but we recognize there's value in those. And so we're proposing that up to a third of the coordinator time in those areas are dedicated to those locally led strategies. We're also, part of this proposal is that we want to develop customized statements of work to each location. We don't want to be in the place where we have always been, where we really have a single statement of work that's pushed to every location in the state. We want to work with the local agencies to know exactly what those strategies are, where the time ought to be spent, and then create that customized statement of work to account for the local conditions. That's an important one for us. And then ultimately, we acknowledge that there are places where, as we're consolidating, that we need to be very closely monitoring. I think this is certainly the case in the region where we're combining Chelan and Kittitas. We're going to closely monitor to ensure some equity in effort between those two areas. So, for example, one of the dynamics that we're right now of the existing structure is that we pay for about 24 hours of work a week in Kittitas and 24 hours of work a week in Chelan Douglas. So each week between the two areas, we're getting about 48 hours of coordinator work. We know that in sort of this combined region, we're going to have to look at sizing the contract. So we may be somewhere closer to a full-time position to manage the work between those two counties. So that's, you know, those sort of issues as we get into contracting and really get into the proposal, we would be very closely, working closely with the local agencies to create a statement of work and a dollar amount for that contract that fits the work that's being done. So it's much more customized in that sense. So this is the last slide before I go over what would be our next steps. And it really addresses a procedural issue for us in terms of how we acquire coordinator services. Our first preference is ultimately that we have this locally hosted FTE, where a county or municipal government agency provides funding in conjunction with the Traffic Safety Commission to host an FTE. It signifies a lot of support, a lot of commitment by those local agencies. We recognize that this isn't going to be possible in every location, and it can sometimes be more difficult in the less populated areas of the state. So the second preference would be a move toward a dynamic that we're seeing in several federal programs. The Homeland Security Intelligence Analyst is one of those, where the federal funding comes to a state agency, and that state agency contracts directly with the service provider in the area, and then has a separate housing agreement with a county or a city government agency. So what this does, it ultimately creates a clear accountability link between the state funder and the service provider. We've been in sort of the awkward position where we're exclusively in the contractor area, we're exclusively in this third preference where we have a local pass-through, and we're really the sole funder of that contractor, and sometimes puts the local agencies also in an awkward position where they're supervising and ensuring performance of a resource that they don't pay for. So for us, this can be an important change, and part of what we would do in this as we go out to procurement for services in these areas is ensure that there's local participation in the selection team. That's important for us. It's important to have that local voice as we go to procurement to have a say in how those coordinators are selected. So our proposal today really includes that staff, that we progressively work through this succession of preferences in how we acquire those coordinator services locally. So the final slide then is just the sort of our next steps, which is working very closely with the local agencies to develop those customized statements of work. That's important as we look at trying to tailor our services for the areas that we're proposing. We want to work collaboratively to create a statement of work that makes sense for the local community, and that would be our very first step. And we mentioned here that there would be some sizing of contracts, particularly for areas that we're expanding responsibility in those three areas where we would consolidate from two coordinators to one. And then ultimately, once we get those statements of work put together, we would initiate a procurement process in collaboration with those local agencies to select those contractors for the service areas. And again, that would be a collaborative process with those local agencies to ensure a service provider for the area. So with that, I'll express my thanks again and then answer any questions that you might have.
Commissioner, do you have any questions before we open this up for comment?
I do. On the $200,000 reduction that is happening from October to the current proposal, what is the $200,000 going towards if you redirect those dollars?
So that would be, this is our federal pool of projects, so it would go back into our annual planning process, our grant process, so that project proposals that we get in each year would essentially free up some dollars to go toward additional projects, either at the state level or local level.
I was wondering, can you directly link it to the target zero that you referred to as part of the objectives of Results Washington and the target zero? Is the $200,000 going directly into helping address those key indicators in target zero?
Absolutely, yeah. So in our annual grants process, we ask any proposer to include a list of the Target Zero plan strategies they will employ. And each of those strategies is tied to one or more of those Results Washington indicators.
And then just a comment on your statement of work. Have you considered also doing performance measures so you can evaluate whether or not there's value being added to the money being spent?
Yeah, very briefly, but hearing you mention that probably would strengthen our commitment to trying to create some performance measures in those contracts. Yeah, thank you.
The statements of work have specific deliverables, and so the evaluation piece, trying to see the value of that, is needs to be built into these. Yes.
Yeah, like usually statements of work will have like certain, you know, deadlines that they have to get things done. But I was actually thinking of, could we put in some performance measures that go beyond just that and look at, is there value? What's the results and what kinds of outcome measures and process measures can we put in place to measure the effectiveness?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I had a question about the local strategies. Is there, is it possible for us to direct some funding or find some funding to look at evaluating sort of the value of the local strategies, and if it's indeed doing what we think it's doing? I guess I'm thinking about DARE and how, you know, we implemented a strategy that didn't help do what I think was originally intended to do, which is decrease drug use among youth, but it did help sort of strengthen connectivity to law enforcement, and it had some beneficial side effects. It just didn't do what it was intended to do. So do we have any planning, or could we?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's actually one that came up in our very first stakeholder meeting with Walla Walla, where that was sort of our first realization that these local strategies are very important to the communities. And there are some programs that, you know, it gets a little difficult because the programs are so varied. There are some of those programs that have been studied and studied fairly well. The one that comes to mind is some of the high school educational assemblies. Some of them are the Grim Reaper demonstrations, or every 15 minutes where we're hosting sort of this assembly and we're trying to educate the kids on the dangers of impaired driving or speeding or distracted driving, those sort of things. So there is a body of research behind those. Mostly what that research shows is that there have to be very specific components of those programs in order to be effective. And sometimes the most effective are when they're peer-led. So it's not, you know, it's not school administrators or teachers, you know, just sort of spouting things. It's peer-led. And some of the programs, these local programs in the state, are peer-led. But there's also some conflicting research about the results. How long does that type of educational impact last for youth? There are studies that show it doesn't last very long. There might be sort of a spike in awareness of better driving habits, but then sometimes those will wear off. So there's research. The research on that is a little bit mixed, but there is a body of research that shows support for that. There are other programs that we're not quite sure if there is any research out there. We have a research director who's helped look into some of those. But your question is a good one, and one that in Walla Walla came up, and potentially considering that option of funding more research to see if we can document the outcomes of those locally led educational projects.
Yeah, that came up several times. One in Walla Walla, I think Grace Harbor, Grant Adams came up when we were there. Reference, is it Big Bend Community College is there?
Yeah, Big Bend does a lot of work with the youth and the young drivers. So like you mentioned, the every 15 minutes campaign, because actually now it's every 51 minutes.
Yeah.
That campaign has been that successful, but it's lowered fatalities. But yeah, and you mentioned there are other programs that do work, but it's education-based. And I know every other person in this room that's wearing or worn a uniform knows we will never arrest or enforce our way out of this stuff.
Yeah, so they did come up several times. So, I mean, it was maybe some of the universities or the colleges could potentially provide some resources to help work on some of those.
Okay. Anyone else on the panel? And then, as I'm reading, we are going to be taking public testimony, and I believe if you come up to the front of the room and your name, status,
the sheet
and whatever.
Is back there here.
Back?
Yeah, there's a sheet back here. We'll grab that for you.
Did everybody sign legibly? Okay. Commander? Is that it?
Well, I think we're going to, do you want to go last? Or do you want to go now?
I can go now, that's fine. My name's Steve Ost. I'm a commander with the Lewis County Sheriff's Office. And by the way, I brought some smoked salmon before you do the vote.
So. Oh, my goodness.
Just kidding.
Okay.
What I want to say is, I thought I was going to go last. It's fine. I go first. There's going to be some people that are going to get up here and speak after me. They're going to speak about this specific plan and how it's going to impact us, the people that are specifically doing the job out there, and how there's only so many hours in a week that these Target Zero managers are going to have to do the work. And by taking on multiple counties, that's going to create some problems for us. So I would ask that you listen. I don't want to take up a lot of time here because they're going to speak to their individual counties. In my particular case, Lewis County is going to be taking on Mason and Wekiakum.
No. Cowlitz.
I'm sorry. Cowlitz and Wekiakum. I was looking at the Mason County Sheriff. So sorry about that. I'm not taking your case. Sorry about that. We're going to be taking over Cowlitz and Wekiakum. And I think we can do a pretty good job of that. And I'm not putting anybody else down, but I think that our sheriff understands the importance of it. And so in our particular case, I think we're going to do a fine job of that. In other areas, trying to be one Target Zero manager taking on another county where maybe you've got two fantastic programs, there's only so many hours in the week. And I think that's what you're about to hear. With that being said, I do want to commend Darren and his staff. They have done a fantastic job working with us. And I would be remiss if I didn't recognize that. I've been involved with this since it started in February. And we went from, I think Chris said that we learned a lot of things. I think they did. They went from just this to the east-west side now to where we're at 17. And I think that's a huge step. So I'm not saying I have all the answers here. I'm just saying please listen to what you're about to be told. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Then Sheriff Casey Salzberg.
Might I ask before I go up, I thought I heard somebody from Kidd Cass County was here. Are there going to be speaking?
Yeah. I'll be speaking on behalf of the Target Zero Manager.
But I would allow them to go first because I'm actually going to speak on behalf of Sheriff Gene Dana, and maybe they're going to cover what Gene is going to cover.
Thank you.
Whatever you want to do.
Okay, is that okay?
Yes. So okay. Are you Kim or Ann?
I'm Kim.
Okay.
And I'm the Target Zero Manager of Kittitas County. And just briefly, I just wanted to go speak on behalf of all the Target Zero Managers. And I'm one of the counties where they're regionalizing. There's two of us currently, Evelyn at Chelan Douglas and Kim at Kittitas County. And I just wanted to talk about what the new proposal is going to mean in Kittitas County. I'm an FTE, and so I work 34 hours a week, and I absolutely know that Evelyn works more than 24 hours a week on this project, on these programs. So one full-time position certainly cannot take care of what we've been accomplishing in our counties. Kittitas County is hoping to celebrate on January 1st zero fatalities. We're at zero. We're really excited because 4 years ago we lost two local kids, one driving drunk, one got into the car sober and died. We feel like we have an every 15 minutes like program in Kittitas County. We call it When the Clock Strikes You. I work very closely with Darren Wright with the Washington State Patrol. We started, after those kids died, we decided that we were going to get back into the high schools with an every 15-minute-like program, minus the Grim Reaper. And we feel like it's working, and in our eyes, it is working. I absolutely know that I know a third of our work. I appreciate that you're giving us a third of our time spent with outreach, but it's not enough, absolutely not enough. And then additionally, I appreciate the flexible funding that we've been offered, and that's going to be really great for our Kittitas County because of all the transient people that come in for Brew Fest and Jazz in the Valley and the fair and Central Washington University Homecoming. That flexible funding is going to be very helpful for our law enforcement. But taking away education, I don't care how good the Target Zero manager is. For a region where you have to cover 12,000 square miles, they're not going to be able to do what we're doing. And it's sacrificing lives in Kittitas County and in Mason County. Changing driver behaviors in the Target Zero plan. And we in Kittitas County believe that you change driver behavior by starting early so that we can get kids on board with us to say, I'm not riding with you if you're texting. Let me out of the car now. I'm not riding with you. You've been drinking. I think it's a trickle-up thing. I don't think that youth or adults being pulled over and arrested are getting, I don't think that changes driver behavior. I'm so thankful that our law enforcement gets out there and gets these people off the roads, but I'd rather have less contacts and less arrests and more kids educated at a young age to change their behavior starting now. I know it's a business model to cut to save money, but in our county, and I believe in all the counties, that I think that we're trying to save lives and not save $200,000 a year. I think you're sacrificing lives in our little rural counties, and these guys do an awesome job, law enforcement and Target Zero. So thank you for listening, and we just highly recommend that you step back and go way back. And that evaluation and looking at the programs and how they're working is a great idea, but it's working. It's working in Kittitas County anyway, because we are at zero deaths. So thank you so much for listening.
Okay. So then, Ann, did you want to go next?
My name is Ann Riley. I am the director of the Kittitas County Community Network and Coalition. Kim M. Smith is our TZM, and she's part of our organization. As an organization, we work to build local capacity to address substance abuse and injury prevention for Kittitas County. The strength of our work is in our collaboration with our local partners. We work to bring together a broad base of community partners, including law enforcement, school educators, parents, youth, healthcare providers, media, social service providers, faith community representatives, civic engagement groups, and youth-serving organizations. This broad-based collaboration is critical in successfully addressing chronic and complex community health and safety issues in our county. I'm concerned about the long-term impact of the proposed regional model on Kittitas County. This regional proposal will save $200,000 in operation costs, but the loss of local capacity and sustainability will be much greater. I have worked in public health and prevention initiatives for over 20 years. I have been a part of regional efforts related to tobacco prevention, HIV prevention, and women's health initiatives. In each of these cases, regional models eventually evolved to county and community-based models that allowed for local assessment, planning, and implementation. Changing behavior is a complex business. It requires a variety of strategies that not only involve providing information and education, but also involves enhancing skills, providing support, enhancing access and reducing barriers, changing consequences, changing physical design, and modifying policies. Most of these strategies are best implemented at a local level, and local being where we live. When communities are given the ability to take ownership of an issue and work together to address the issue, sustainable change happens. I urge the Commission to consider the impact of regionalization on individual counties like Kittitas, consider the capacity that will be lost in these counties, and consider the sustainability of our efforts that will be lost.
I'm Sheriff Casey Salisbury, Mason County Sheriff's Office. On a few of these issues, I'll be speaking on behalf of Sheriff Gene Dana from Kittitas County and Sheriff Scott Johnson from the Pacific County Sheriff's Office. The first thing I wanted to relate, and I mean this figuratively, I think I bent Darren's arm and threw him around the room and fell short of everything but a crowded chokehold for back and forth over this issue. And I have to say, I really respect his position. And I explained that to him yesterday because I know that in the coming months, I'm going to be very close to the same position as my budget gets cut, and there are going to be people unhappy with some of the decisions I make. And I really appreciate your level of professionalism there on the phone, keeping us informed, because sheriffs sometimes were a little bit breed a different cat, and we kind of tend to speak out a little bit differently. But I thank you for your professionalism each time you've made contact with us. On behalf of Sheriff Dean Dana, both of these other individuals I'm speaking on behalf of were on the blue side first. Both of them were former Washington State, retired Washington State troopers that know a lot more about this than I do. Gene and I talked yesterday, and we share the same feeling, and I related that to Darren yesterday, that we feel that our programs are both going to, it's going to suffer. Our coordinators are there for us sometimes on immediate need, and it's really difficult to call and have somebody drive from miles away for something that needs to be taken care of today, or a program that's going on today that we weren't aware of. And we feel that it's going to be difficult for us to maintain that same level of help that we've had in the past. I talked with Sheriff Scott Johnson. Of course, Scott was one of the counties that a few years ago didn't have anybody to help in his county. Scott relates that, you know, he really appreciates that they've been considered to at least have somebody there. But in his situation, as he spoke up earlier, we were looking at, it appears to us in the smaller counties that counties that have a lot more resources, when we have some person move out of our county, that's a huge percentage of our overall office. Where if you go to a larger, throughout Snow County, Pierce County, if they have somebody drop off from their office, the percentage of loss isn't near as big as it is in our small counties. And Scott had related at one time that there's a life in Pacific County that, as a troop, when he was out there, maybe just a few cars going by, does that one car that he stops and pulls off the road, does that equate to anything less when he saves somebody's life and somebody's life that might be saved in Snohomish County? And he was deeply concerned that being left out of that, and again, appreciates being considered. I also speak on a little bit on her behalf of Michelle Baumgartner, our coordinator, who at a drop of a hat has been there for us when we really needed her. In between myself, I'm only one sheriff in our county, we only have one city, and she does an awful lot that we just don't have the staffing to do. And we're one, and it looks like we're going to one coordinator. The other thing that I would mention is that, interestingly enough, Ms. Mullen spoke to the DARE program, and I was one of those people that spent a fair amount of my career in this county as a DARE officer. And I find it interesting, and she's right, that some of the things maybe weren't as perfect as they were, but we did see an effect. Teen smoking went down, and as soon as we all left, it started to creep back up. The other thing that I find interesting is, I guess I've done it long enough now, I'm old enough now, that I have kids that were in my DARE class that are begging us to put DARE back into the schools because they're children in schools. And that what we did during that time was so important and valuable to them to make life decisions that they found a great deal of use for that. I know that in our community, the day that Mr. Grundell and his staff came down and spoke with us, I had to get up and leave and go to a program, an educational program at the school. And I know, again, it was one of those things I kind of threw back at him, but I had got 50 letters back from students in that alternative high school that really struggle with these issues. And I sent those to Mr. Grundell as well. I think they went to some other folks in the community. And their answer to me was, I asked them afterwards, I said, we are looking at maybe removing having these kind of things or not having them as frequently. I said, what do you guys think? Now remember, this is an alternative high school. I'm a cop in uniform. So the response, and I thought spoke pretty loudly, crazy. Kid says, we really don't like you guys, but we wish you were here more often. And so, you know, grab that for what you will if you're law enforcement in that environment. But I think the message was that we really do like having you here. It does make a difference. We feel that we're going to have less time for local support by the region. But again, I do want to say I appreciate so much from the first meeting that we came over here, and I was kind of griping at the top of my lungs about it, that you did go back and take a look at that and reconsider and try to retool some things. So thank you for that. And just that's just our opinion. Thank you.
And then just the final person that signed up, and then I'll open it up, is Les Watson from Shelton PD, right?
Yes. No worries. Do you want these?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Les Watson, the Acting Chief of Shelton Police Department. And like some of the others before me, I want to first of all recognize the professional work, hard work, and smart work that's done by the people that work for you, starting with Darren through Chris, Etika. I haven't met Angie, I don't think, but there must be a number of people underneath that that also make this thing work. They've done a great job in putting together a plan. Unfortunately, it does have some adverse impacts on some of our organizations. And Sheriff Salisbury, his county is the county in which our city exists, and we're the only incorporated city in that county, Mason County. We believe that we're going to be adversely impacted by at least part of this plan in eliminating the Target Zero manager, Michelle Baumgart's position. What Chris said earlier, I think he left out Pacific County when he said that we were going to be connected Mason and Grays Harbor, but there's also Pacific County. That currently, in my understanding, doesn't have a Target Zero manager up there. So it will be a three-county region that will be effectively worked by one Target Zero manager based in Grays Harbor County. In Shelton and Mason County, we've had a Target Zero manager for the last 12 years. It started in February of 2002. Michelle's been doing this for the vast majority of that time, I think 11 of those 12 years, if I'm not mistaken. The Target Zero's objective primarily, isn't it true, is to have zero fatalities by the year 2030. Is that correct? We believe that by removing this position, you're going to impact your opportunity to achieve that objective. We just don't have the personnel in Mason County between Sheriff Salisbury's office and my department. If we lose that resource, we don't have the people that we can put into managing it. We don't think that one person centralized in Grays Harbor County is going to provide the same level of service that we're experiencing right now. I just don't think it can be done. So I really appreciated Commissioner Mullen's comment a few minutes ago, because I had a note here about something that I didn't know if anybody really realized what a byproduct of this Target Zero program is. And that byproduct is that it does bring law enforcement entities together in a way that they would otherwise not come together at all. So we have Mason County Sheriff's Office, the Shelton Police Department, and we have tribes north and south of our city that all get involved in the Target Zero program. Now, the Skokomish doesn't so much anymore, but the Squaxin Island Police Department does. And it's not unusual to see a different uniform walking in front of my office, and when I stop and say, hey, what you got going on? I'm here for a Target Zero meeting, or we're working on an effort. We have, I fielded phone calls from angry parents who wondered, why is your police car, why is a Shelton police car stopping my daughter 15 miles north on Highway 3? Well, ma'am, it's because we're working together to make our roads safe. That's a happy answer. That's, you know, I'm proud and happy to say that. So, bottom line is that we believe that this shift or elimination of local resources will adversely impact our ability to reach the overall Target Zero objectives. I also had a note here that I think I can speak for Sheriff Salisbury. That was before I realized he was going to show up today. When I say that, again, I'll repeat, we don't have the personnel to manage this more effectively than we are right now. We lose Shell's position. We don't have the staff to make it happen. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. So that is the extent of the people that have physically signed up. But if anyone else would like to say anything that has not signed up, we'd be glad to listen.
I'm Tom Robbins, and I'm the chief of Wenatchee Police Department. And
I didn't bring any prepared comments, but I too wanted to commend Darren and Chris and staff for your hard work on this. It's been very difficult for you, I know, and we've gone through a number of exercises here. We've done this and arrived where we are, so I appreciate that. I also appreciate having our task force intact. I think we are going to be stretching further, and it's really kind of like these gentlemen spoke about earlier and Kim spoke about. We'll be stretched further to provide services, which may lean the services out in those areas, probably will, effectively. I think collaboration is important, so I think we're going to have to really, I think Evelyn would have to really collaborate with Kittitas County people, Okanagan County. We were covering Okanagan County before, but it'll take a lot of collaboration to cover those four counties. But we'll work that out and try to get it done if that's where our way is at. But I really appreciate everything you've done. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
So my name is Rich Smith. I'm a firefighter, EMS provider for Kittitas Valley Fire and Rescue. And my wife happens to be Kim Smith. So it's kind of an awkward position for me to talk to try to share with you information. But one thing I've noticed is there's not a lot of EMS perspective or fire department perspective in these meetings because law enforcement is so closely working with our TZMs, Target Zero Managers. But one thing I have to share, the value of these Target Zero Managers positions and their relation to child safety passenger seats and the work they do in our communities with that alone. I was at a meeting at the fire station on Tuesday night, and I got a call from one of our local law enforcement agents, and he said, "Hey, where's your wife?" And I'm like, "I think she's home." He goes, "I tried calling her, I can't get a hold of her, and I need her right now." And I'm like, "What's this about?" You know, I didn't know what he was getting at. It's like, "I need her too. I'm kind of first in line here." So anyway, he said, "I made a traffic stop, and these people have a 3-year-old child that doesn't have a car seat. And me writing them a ticket right now is not going to help their predicament. They're going from the west side, they're in Ellensburg, and they need to go to Ephrata." And he said, I was trying to get a hold of Kim, and so I was like, "Okay, hold on, I'll call her." And he said, "I already tried calling her, she's not answering her phone." I was like, "Well, let me try." And so I called her. Yeah, it was 9:30 at night, and I called her. I go, "Hello?" She goes, "Yeah, I already talked to Jeff. I'm on my way." And so she left home. She was in bed asleep, and she went down to her office, picked up a car seat, and met us down at the McDonald's where he had made the stop, just so these people could get on their way. And if we were to lose my wife or our Target Zero manager, just in that aspect alone, it's going to be physically impossible for someone to come from Chelan County to Ellensburg. You know, so what are the alternatives? I don't know. There's probably some other alternatives, but in that instance, it worked out the way it's designed to have somebody you can count on locally to provide this service. And yeah, and that's so. Yeah, and that's not the first time that's happened, but it just was a coincidence that it happened just this week. The one thing I can say from the fire department, we've worked closely with her office as far as the educational piece. We get involved with the Every 15 Minutes program, which we first got from, which we first adopted from Walla Walla when I worked for Wenatchee Fire Department, and then we brought it to Ellensburg, which is now it's When the Clock Strikes You. It's amazing when you get kids coming up to you after the program and say thank you. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And I've been on too many accidents in my time with kids. The last one was 4 years ago, and I don't want to see another one. You know, they're hard. So we need that educational piece in our small communities as well as our big communities. But it's an incredible value that we're getting. These guys are providing, you know, a great thing for our state, and hopefully we can figure out a way to keep them, you know, in our small communities. But anyway, thank you for working with us on this. I know you guys have a tough job, so thanks for your time.
Anyone else?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Bob Heimbach. I'm the chief of Quincy PD, and I'm the new guy on the block. I just started there last December. And I want the commission to know that this staff did really well when they came to Central Washington for their site visit. They took a beating, and they smiled the whole time. But they did. They took a lot of hits from us because there was a lot of angst over the February proposal. And it was brand new to me. Never seen it before. There's two pieces I just want to share that I just want you to consider as you, as a commission, consider the different proposals. Number one is education. We can't do without education. We've heard about every 50 minutes. We've heard about when the clock strikes two. We've touched on DARE. There's another one that I've been intimately involved with for years called GREAT. Totally different arena, gang resistance education and training. Here's the trick. That program is research-based. It's been funded by the feds for 20 years by BJA, now it's OJJDP. 40% reduction in gang joining post-program after 2 years with those children. Education works. We can't cut that piece out of this pie. We've got to keep the education going, however you fund it. As I said earlier when I just sort of spouted off, we will never arrest our way or enforce our way out of any of this. We just won't. How long have we been doing these jobs as police officers, and how many tickets have we written? How many people have we arrested? And we're still kids dying, people killing each other, etc. The other piece is just on the funding. What I would like ask you to consider is when you talk about the funding piece, I know that there are federal resources and state resources coming in together on this, two different funding streams. I would ask that you distribute those equitably across the state and not designate state to one side, federal to the other, or however you want to do it. Because of my prior job, I know that the federal pool is drying up. And if it's not the hot topic inside the Beltway, it gets no traction with Congress. And those dollars will dry up, and I would hate to see any part of this state lose its funding simply because we, as a group, had dedicated, okay, we're going to use federal funds for this area of the state. Oh, we're out of money, sorry. It's got to be equitable across the board. The other thing I know is that those dollars are drying up. The program I was involved with before, I watched it in the 5 years I was there go from about $25 million down to $8 million. And that is really hard to do a national program on $8 million. And when you start breaking up your regions and making them bigger and having coordinators do more with less, I know from personal experience, you don't spend as much time in those different places. You don't have the physical ability or the time to spend in those other areas. I'm not going to sit here and tell you don't take our Target Zero coordinator or Target Zero manager. I know, I see the writing on the wall. I'm just asking that you make your decision wisely with all the information you can gather. Thank you.
Okay, we're probably up against time, so.
My name's Josh Sainsbury. I'm a sergeant with Grant County. I'm also the new project director for Central Basin Traffic Safety Task Force. I'm not here to pat myself on the back, but in 2011, from 2010, July 2010 to February 2011, our county lost eight kids, 15 to 21 years old. Ryan Raymond is a trooper. Him and I went together. We decided to reach out to every high school in our county, except for one they didn't allow us in. We've since got in. We reached out to 6,000 kids in a matter of 5 weeks. We did 21 presentations to reach out and tell them the true effects of impaired driving. It was a lot of work, very hard. But we only asked for 1 hour. We took two cars that we had, the first one and the last one, dropped them off in the parking lot and answered questions. Since then, we've lost one kid. June of 2011, he didn't see it. He didn't see the presentation, but we're still successful. We're still going into the high schools. Now we're being asked to come back and present again to see the kids that didn't get to see it the first time. The education's important. The enforcement's important. Everything that we do is important. You guys have done an outstanding job, and I appreciate taking what we had to say in Moses Lake and putting it into play, I do see the changes. So whatever decision you make, the education is very important to us, and it's been successful, I know, on the big grand scheme of things in this nation. It's not proven, but it has been for us in our local community. Thank you.
So since we're going to be out of here at noon, I don't think that's going to happen this time.
Well, is a comment on Chief, what you said, is that the way that the funds are distributed as far as state and federal, we don't disseminate federal and state based on, you know, in different parts. There's a percentage for each Target Zero manager from state and federal. So that's where part of the problem comes in, is trying to maintain all of the coordinators with all of the funding and all the issues. So, but it's equally distributed. It's not, you know, Western Washington gets feds and Eastern Washington gets state funds. So it's equally distributed.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yes.
I'm going to then come back to the commission and questions, comments.
I have another question on the federal money, and it would go back into the pool for grant availability. How many applications do you turn away in the federal grant application process?
It varies from year to year, and in some
cases, just give last year's figures of what you turned away of people
probably,
that.
Probably, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20. Yeah.
15 or 20 grants?
15 or 20 proposals. And then we do make some reductions. We have kind of a negotiation period with awardees to see whether we can reduce certain amounts and that sort of thing.
So what I see is just a certain pot of money and only so much that you can spend in that pot of money to along all those priority areas, right?
Correct. And what we've had to do is in the previous year when we eliminated the Pacific County and the Jefferson County positions, is we still had to add in almost $100,000 into the program because of those rising costs. So what it does is it effectually keeps taking away from all those of the proven strategies and the other grant proposals for that. So, and our funding just continues to stay flat.
So I just want to speak to this action. I want to thank the commission staff and Darren for the leadership in going through what has been the most difficult and the most staff-intensive decision and process in my 3 years that I volunteered on the commission, by far. And I'll just say, in my 5 years as an elected official, I never encountered a budget that didn't have a deficit. And one of my least favorite things is being in a room with folks whose decisions I have to make on will affect their jobs and possibly eliminate their jobs. My second least favorite thing is making decisions on policies that people can rightly argue on one side or the other are going to result in costing lives or saving lives. In public safety, where I'm the chair in the city of Spokane, it's something we do every month in our committee meetings. And it's always a struggle when we go through these discussions to communicate to the public how we're making these decisions. It's great to hear in the feedback today that we have a lot of veterans of public funding wars here that understand how difficult this is. To the citizen, I feel people fall into two camps. If it doesn't affect me, I don't want to pay for it. Or you're missing something, you're not prioritizing this item as much as you should. And I think that's what happened here in April. People came to us and said, you're missing something. You're not prioritizing something as high as you should. And that's what took us on this 6 month journey to get where we are now. I feel like the commission was good listeners on that. I think we went forward in a good way. And I think the folks that gave us feedback gave us very solid and articulate feedback. But it still brings us to where we are. And the problem is, and I've seen this on so many different boards and commissions that I serve on, is funding ongoing increasing costs from federal grants. It is so fraught with danger and the potential for even worse pain later on as we see those federal sources become more and more unpredictable, unless they're completely predictable in the fact that they are shrinking and shrinking more and more. So, with all those things into consideration, and the fact that since Target Zero managers were first installed in the state of Washington, our per capita spending of all Washington State services per citizen has shrunk steadily year after year. As our state continues to grow year after year, is also a big problem. We have a structural problem in our taxing situation that makes these kinds of decisions even tougher. Ideally, we would have more state money to make up for that federal money, but we don't right now. Then we're further challenged by the fact that Washington State is probably the most geographically diverse state in the country. We're not Rhode Island, we're not dense and small, we're vast and spread out. And that makes it really hard to come up with these sorts of decisions. But given all that, and given this proposal that we have now, I think we've come up with what I think is a good compromise, and I'm going to support it.
Chief? Darren, first and foremost, I want to say to you and your team, you've done a great job, in my view. This has been very, very difficult. We sat here months ago, and we listened to a lot of input, and we came to a realization that we need to go out, we need to talk to some folks and hear what they have to say. I think it's in the best interest of the program, and I think that you've done that. I've done this for a long time. Before we actually paid attention as a state to the Strategic Highway Safety Plan, we used to put these together every year, and no one paid attention to our Strategic Highway Safety Plan. And if we saw fit to call it Target Zero with a reason, is that we were losing too many lives on our highways. And so we said one life lost should be too much. We call it Target Zero, and we spread that message abroad to let folks know what Target Zero above was all about. And look, everybody got on board. That's great. It's helped us save a lot of lives. Dating back to 2005, where we lost 659 or so lives, now we're down to 436 last year. We're doing great things. Target Zero managers, folks out on the roads enforcing laws, people educating kids are doing a great job. It's my hope and our having to make a very difficult decision, because we're all making difficult decisions. I am making difficult decisions in my agency on a daily basis, and I have been since about 2008 when it comes to budget situations. I've lost over 100 positions within my agency over the course of the last 5 to 6 years, and I'm still subject to losing more as we enter into the 15-17 biennial period. Very tough decisions that are impacting people's lives, people's careers. So I understand the complexity and the difficulty of what you are experiencing as a staff, but I applaud you in how you've gone about it. You've gone about it conscientiously, and you use data to help drive your decisions, and you're using evidence-based practices. There's a lot of talk about the education component of this being lost. So I'd like to hear in terms of, is that in fact the case? And if so, what can we do about that?
I don't see that the educational component is going to be lost. With the regional coordinators, they are coordinators continuing to do the educational components. And that's why with those customizable contracts and working with the regions is to identify what do they want to have in those areas. That's why we can size the contracts to address any of those issues. It may not be as robust as it is today, but those are going to continue. Our intent is not to all of a sudden not have anything going on, and that, I hope that message has not been conveyed, is that those educational pieces will continue with those regional coordinators. So,
and we anticipate that up to one-third of the time that we've included in this proposal is primarily educational strategies at the local community level. That's the inclusion for the education for the most part. Those are the strategies we found as we went out on meetings that are being implemented locally, mostly educational focused.
And I think what's a part of that is that those that may not be seen as proven and recommended within the Strategic Highway Safety Plan, there's other educational components that are, that wouldn't fall into that one-third. It's just those that may not be seen as proven or recommended within the Strategic Highway Safety Plan. And that's why as we went through these meetings and identifying, we need to find some additional strategies that are effective within those rural communities for the 2016 Strategic Highway Safety Plan rewrite.
Yeah, I think the important thing is we're forced with change is that we are now looking to ensure that we do a better job of helping the target zero managers focus on the mission, the things that really should help us make a difference. I think that's important that we do that, and I think it's important that we continually assess the effectiveness of what it is that we're asking people to do, and that we not only get that feedback in terms of the results here as a commission, but we share that with the community at large, because there's a lot of interest in this, and we appreciate that. We need you to continue to do what you're doing. I know for a fact in Mason County, Chief and the Sheriff, you've made a tremendous difference over there. We were losing a lot of lives 4, 5, 6 years ago in Mason County. And by your two agencies joining forces with the others, in particular my troopers over here, you made a tremendous turnaround. That's just one example of what's happening around the state and in many communities. We need to continue that. In Pierce County, before Target Zero ever became in vogue, police chiefs decided that we would work collectively, all 19 agencies, 21, including at that time the two military bases, to impact trying to make a difference on our roadways. So we decided to create rolling patrols. And we'd go into each other's neighborhoods, and we would impact the community from an enforcement and educational standpoint that drove fatalities way down, and that program continues today. It takes leaders in recognizing the benefits of doing something like that, with or without what you had, if we make a change. You still, in my belief, as leaders, should hopefully be pulling together to work together to make those changes occur, to impact things that are life-altering situations within your community. I appreciate that. My troops, my sergeants, lieutenants, and captains all over the state will continue to work closely with everybody that they're working with today. Nothing changes. If anything, we're going to roll up our sleeves and get more involved in helping communities that are going to be negatively impacted by this situation. And I ask that you reach out to them, and I'll ensure that the captains do the same thing in reaching out to you, knowing that to a large degree, some communities are going to be impacted by these decisions, but these are necessary decisions. So I appreciate your great work.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just also want to say thanks for the great work. This is tough work that you and your staff have done, and sometimes the only compliment you can get out of it is that you listened well. And I just want to point out, when this issue is settled, we have about $210 million in similar issues over at DSHS, so we could use your help with that.
Yeah, yeah, thanks too.
But great work. Thank you very much for representing the commission so well, you and your team. Thank you.
So I too would like to thank you. I know that we've talked many times about it, and I've been very passionate about my TZM. Unfortunately, I lost a great person when he retired, and we haven't been able to refill it, and we chose not to refill at the request of Darren. And moving forward with a partnership, I'm hoping, and making sure that we can get at least something, because we do miss. But, you know, these are hard decisions, and I've lived through now my 8th budget at Skagit County, and it doesn't seem to get any better. I've lost 79 people, and hard decisions to make, absolutely, utterly devastating. But, you know, this is, I have to say, that I love this organization, because they took what the commission said, and the staff went out and made it happen. You know, we wanted it different. We didn't like February's. We chose, you know, take it back to the drawing board, and you did what we asked you to do, and you met, and I was at one of those meetings, and you know, it was okay. You came and you did smile and did the whole thing, and life was good. But I also, you know, want to thank all of you for sticking with us and making sure that your voices were heard. And I think that the October proposal, you know, may not be perfect, but knowing this staff as they go forward, will take this and maybe even change it more as they see what's happening in each one of our regions and making sure that they work. And I got a feeling that this is a fluid proposal, that it will move forward in a very fluid and the flex. I love the ability of the flexibility for each one of us in our regions to have something different, because we do different in Skagit County. We don't do what you guys do with child safety. That's in another division that we do. So that wouldn't be part of ours, but it is obviously part of yours. So I'm thinking that flexibility is awesome. I thank you guys for
allowing that to be part of what you do in your contracts and your development. So,
thank you.
Else?
Just as a reminder, too, that the current contracts that are in place are still good through June 30th, 2015.
Okay.
So the transition of all this would begin July 1st, 2015.
Okay.
So, I mean, in some areas, if there's a change or a transition and they want to transition earlier, that's part of this proposal as well. I mean, we can work that through. But right now, it is continuing through June 30th, 2015.
And we can work on partnerships, because that's my
that's the
we're gonna work together to do something else. So you didn't
well,
do that though, okay?
I have no doubts.
Okay, so if I'm thinking correctly, you would like us to make a proposal to accept or deny this proposal. Staff is going, yeah.
Yes.
They've worked very, very hard on this, and I commit them very, very hard. So anyway, so your wishes, Commission.
So did I hear you make a proposal that we accept this?
Second.
Yes, I'll make a motion to accept the October proposal.
I'll accept it as well.
Okay, so it has been, thank you for all that you do. Thank you guys for all that you do. But it has been moved and seconded that we accept the October proposal made from staff from many, many, many different meetings and I'm sure on your staff many hours. So all those in favor of that, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And all those opposed? Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
You betcha.
Commissioner. If we could, just in the sake of time, we have on the agenda just two items we want to
right.
cover. One of them is not on there, but one is the legislative priorities that
yes.
we want to
yes.
make sure that we cover before or why we have all of you here.
Definitely.
So I'm going to, if you would, I will defer to you, Chair, to call Shelley Baldwin. And while she's standing up, what I would like to do is just, if you could pull up this one right here. Actually, no, this one, sorry. As we are looking at creating efficiencies within our own agency externally and also internally, is that when Chris was promoted up to the deputy director position, it left a vacant Programs and Services Division position. As the director, I have chosen not to refill that position. So that position is being eliminated. And so as you will see here on the screen, we are making some kind of a paradigm shift within the commission organizational structure and reallocating Shelley Baldwin's position to our legislative liaison. And so we will have a very specific and dedicated legislative liaison. It used to be with the deputy director, but at this time
Thank
we feel
you.
it's much better if we could have, and she will also be overseeing part of the media relations, but I want her focus on the legislative agendas that we as a commission prioritize, and then she can work throughout the year. Mark, can you get the door there? So with that, now if we can turn over to Shelley, and Shelley's going to also be supervising Erica Steinman, which kind of separates some of the span of control. But what it does is it helps reduce, even flattens our organization, so we don't have an extra layer of bureaucracy and an extra position. So we are internally even taking those cuts as well.
Very
so,
good.
Thank you. And today is my first day
oh.
under this.
And she is
so
effective today,
oh,
by the way.
Thank you for letting me.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so lots of changes. We have, for many years, I think, moved legislation through what I'll say trust and the agency as being somebody they can count on for really good data, somebody they can count on to present things neutrally, and I think that's served us well. We are, though, becoming a little more proactive than we've been in the past, and I think this is kind of exciting. So with your blessing at the last session, or was it the session before that, when we said, yeah, we were interested in supporting distracted driving, the bill that died last year, we were able to then submit agency request legislation on the distracted driving bill. So it's the same bill as last time. We've got a new Z draft on it. It's in your paper. And I want to thank you very much for that support. There's a few other issues as we move forward that we would like to, as a commission, be able to say, if we were signing in or testifying, that we support. And of course, we would not support anything that the governor doesn't support, allow us to support, or that you guys don't allow us to support. So we have many bars to overcome, but I appreciate you staying a little bit late today so that we could do this, because by the time we're mid-January and we're having our next meeting, it would be possibly over. any chance we could have to go to the legislature and say, yes, we think these are good. So what I'm looking at right now is kind of some conceptual ideas that we at the commission believe would benefit our state in terms of traffic safety moving forward. We're waiting to hear back from the governor's office on the distracted driving legislation, how that'll fall out. So that'll kind of point our direction on that. But we'd also, if any of these other issues were to come forward, we'd like your permission to go ahead and say, yes, this is something the Traffic Safety Commission supports. So are you guys with me on what we're thinking about?
Yes.
So one is this idea that we have open container for alcohol, which means you cannot drive in your car with an open container of alcohol. It's very clear, very simple, and it's a great way to separate the idea that we don't drink and drive. It's been very successful, and we would like to have that same type of structure around marijuana.
Hallelujah.
So if we could get a bill, somebody would pick up that bill and say, you know, we want to make an open container type law for marijuana. We would like your permission to say, yes, that's something the Traffic Safety Commission believes is important for traffic safety.
I see. It's not even yes. Okay.
I
just have a question, like,
yeah.
From a liquor board standpoint, are they, when they sell it in a retail, they have to be sealed, and that would be considered not an open container, right? I mean, is there enough guidelines and rules around that?
I think that's what the bill would have to consider, is what would you consider as an open container? Is it a candy bar that's been open and it's left in there that's got marijuana in it, or is it just that you have the green vegetable matter that's open and they have a smoking device that they're openly smoking? I mean, I think there's going to have to be some very specific language in there, because I think right now Colorado is very concerned about Halloween, because now they've got these huge candy bars that are infused with marijuana that they're passing out and giving to kids. So there's some issues there about what that would be.
Yeah, it should address all consumables in terms of marijuana. So byproducts, smoking, none of that should be allowed while you're operating a vehicle.
Even when they go in and buy, I don't know, I've not gone in there, so
yeah.
I have no idea. So
well, we're going to do a tour.
That's why I was asking the question, was when not the candy bar or the infused, but the regular ounce.
They're sealed.
Are they like Ziploc sealed? Because,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
how do you?
Yeah,
okay.
I think the open container is trying to just use.
Right.
So if you have a sealed package, that would not be subject.
Right.
Is that
yeah, and I think we're looking for some clarity. So if I'm a driver and I'm taking a hit from a bomb, and I'm an officer, or the officer sees me doing this, can he pull me over? Is that open view? And if it's open view, it's a $25 ticket. Is that
okay?
I mean, there's just some inequity. If I was hitting a beer, he'd pull me over and cite me for open container.
Yeah.
And it would be a violation, right? Not a $25. We're never going to talk about it again.
I didn't know how they.
Yeah, I think that they are sealed, and I think that you know, even High Times covered this issue, which I was surprised they were positive in covering it. They said Colorado already has this type of law in their book when they did their whatever. They're ahead of us on that one, and there was their comment, and High Times was, keep it in your trunk, you know, just don't. Don't put it in the passenger area of the car. And so when High Times is saying that, and actually ACLU also said they wrote the law to mirror alcohol laws, so this seems like a reasonable law to them. I mean, we're in a good way to get this. And for level of comfort, if an actual bill were produced, I would share it with all of the people that I'm communicating with you as legislative liaisons that represent your area. And if they were to tell me there's something in there that we can't handle, then Traffic Safety Commission would back off. You ultimately are our bosses. But without any type of discussion, we can't move forward.
I was just curious as to how you dealt with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question.
It is. And I think that's part of why we're not writing agency request legislation, because I don't have all those answers. But I think it's, from a traffic safety standpoint, something we could support if it were to come out. So right now, currently, we have made a lot of progress towards having repeat offenders identified, held until they see a judge. The judge is ordering ignition interlock. They have 5 days to report back to the court that they've actually installed that interlock. The missing loop is the court is not required to report to DOL that that has taken place. So when an officer stops somebody who's under that court order, they have no way of knowing that that interlock is required for that person. So we're missing that little bit of a loop, and if that were to come up in the legislative bill, I would like to very strongly support that we close that loop.
Any objections from the
commission?
From me.
Okay. with ignition interlock, also, there's a couple of things that we need. One of them is we now have cameras in all the ignition interlocks. We're getting some great pictures that are going to the Washington State Patrol impaired driving section, ignition interlock compliance folks, and they can see. I've got a presentation that shows you these pictures after pictures of parents asking their children to blow into the device for them, toddlers that can't actually make it work, and then, you know, 3 or 4 year olds that actually can. The series of pictures, and they take that to the judge, and some judges have ruled that our current definition of circumvention doesn't include blowing into the device, having somebody else blow into the device. So we'd like to put that wording in so that it's very clear that, yes, that is circumventing the device and should not be legal. And then there's a question of jurisdiction. So we have the picture. We know that they've had somebody else blow into it. We get a good definition. We still have to prove jurisdiction. So we're asking that ignition interlock devices must include a GPS. So then we have a definition and we have jurisdiction.
So that's the one piece that I guess I wanted to get some clarification on and I've heard that that's a jurisdictional issue. I've also heard that it's not, and that you're violating a condition.
And it should go back to the judge.
It should go back to sentencing judge. And then, you know, and honestly, if we get involved in this GPS coordinate fight, it's taking on a different dimension. I think we'll get folks at the table arguing more about just the GPS location piece than possibly the policy behind it. So I'm wondering, I would advocate if we could find a way to reframe it. So even if we just need to clarify in the law that a violation will be brought back to the court of original jurisdiction.
So that would be
that we get out of sort of the GPS. And there's also the added expense at a time when the interlock fund got swept. And so that's what my hope would be, that we find something there that.
So to address that concern, what we need is a means of identifying the location that the violation takes place, because we have to establish what county it took place in.
Well, what if we said it doesn't matter which county, it's still a violation of a condition that was given to you by a court in Mason County, so you're going to go back to Mason to that court?
Well, usually, you know, when you make an arrest, you've got to establish with the courts what county did that violation take place in.
I think you're going to end up with three different things.
It's a condition of release. Let's say it's a second DUI and I require the ignition interlock. It's a condition of release. Doesn't matter to me where it happened. They either didn't have ignition interlock or they were having somebody else go into it. That's a violation of the release. If it's a probation violation, then to me it doesn't matter where it happened, if they're circumventing it or not having a functioning ignition interlock. But if it's a new charge of ignition interlock device violation for the traffic events, then it's important where it's occurred.
Well, and that could be the case if ignition interlock has these phases that go, so it gets complicated. But if I'm just suspended and I've elected now to put an interlock in my car so that I can continue driving during my suspension period, I'm not violating probation and I'm not violating a condition of pretrial release. I don't know what happens.
So right now, is there a sanction associated with those who serve that?
Yes, it's a gross misdemeanor.
Okay.
But not for somebody else blowing into it.
But because blowing into it, having somebody else blow into it isn't currently part of that definition, there's no crime.
So it depends on how
so you were wanting to include it in the definition to make it a fine.
Yeah.
Or a violation by the person who's required to have the unlocked device.
So I'm hearing that maybe that part of this discussion is okay with everyone? Having somebody else blow into it is good. The GPS is something we would have to touch base again to see what everybody felt like if that were to come up.
GPS is
GPS is I know that discussion.
Is it? Okay. So it's kind of a bigger issue than interlocks.
Yeah,
so let's back off on that one, but if we could get the definition clarified, we could support that.
Yeah. Well, you need to accomplish the same thing by a different means. If you can.
Yeah, maybe it's
Yeah. So we'll check back on being able to do that a different way.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I know that DOL is working on language that would allow, this is a complicated issue, so I'm going to try to make it really clear. For many, many years, we had an implied consent warning that said,
your blood.
Well, it said that I'm asking you to take this test of your breath or your blood, and you can consent. If you don't consent, then you'll lose your license for 90 days on your first offense, whatever. And they could voluntarily give a breath sample, or they could give a blood sample. And if they refused, or if they gave one of those things and they had a 0.08 BAC, then they were subject to the administrative license sanction that comes from DOL. Okay? McNeely came out, and McNeely was a U.S. case that said basically that we couldn't use indigent circumstances to draw blood anymore, that we needed warrants. When that came out, we were also passing DUI legislation, and during that legislative process, because of McNeely, they removed blood from every single point in that statute. So now we have an implied consent statute that does not include blood. We have officers who will arrest somebody, put them through the process, but they can't now, if they're suspecting drugs, give implied consent warnings to them. They simply have to get the warrant to get the drug, to get the test to find out where their drug level is. So we have this thing that's going on where if I'm suspected of alcohol, DUI, and I take the breath test and it's 0.08 or more, or I refuse the breath test, I get an administrative license sanction. But if I'm on a drug or I make them get the warrant to get my stuff, once they move to the warrant process, all of those that come back at their 0.08 or 5 nanograms of THC cannot be subject to the administrative license suspension. So we have this two-tiered thing going on, which doesn't feel like justice to me. It seems like the intent of the law should be that everybody who's getting a DUI is subject to the same type of sanction, not dependent on how they're tested. So DOL is working on a really good language around clarifying that so that we can continue to get administrative license suspension on everybody who meets the per se limit, regardless of how their test is done.
So what about the coercive component of that we were discussing last year, where we couldn't actually read the warnings?
Right.
And you needed the warnings read in order to do the administrative portion. Have we addressed that?
The bill that you put forth last time would actually allow for an administrative license suspension to take place based on the warrant results,
based on the
blood draw results, not on whether or not they read the implied consent warrant.
I thought last year's issue, based on the Missouri decision, was that whether it was blood or alcohol, blood or breath, we still had a problem if we read the implied consent warnings.
I think if we change the law that allows us to take administrative action on the blood draw, we'll be okay. That's my understanding.
Because you still wouldn't be reading the implied consent warning for blood.
Yeah, I think we're...
So you're not saying, give me blood samples or I'm going to go get a warrant.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with warrants. Our AGs were at odds on if troopers made a DUI stop and you're required to read people their license plates prior to the change. So we were no longer based on an AG's opinion able to read that implied consent warrant.
But I think that was because the only way we could take administrative action is if the implied consent warning is read. Now I think we have the authority to take administrative action if it's a blood draw. So I think it's okay, but I'll check it. I'll make sure.
Okay.
Was it because if we read the implied consent warning for blood and then they refused, and then we still got a warrant, that they felt that was a coercive piece?
Yeah, it was coercive, but I thought it involved breath or blood, not just blood. I warrant to go get blood. It was breath or blood. If we read the consent warning, the AG's view was that it was coercive.
Oh. The issue, I believe, Chief, is that if we read them the implied consent and we got blood, that would be coercive. But if the law was correct, the DOL is desiring, we won't read them implied consent, we're just going to go get a warrant, and then with those results, DOL can take action because they'll have a new process that currently doesn't exist. And it is coercive from the standpoint that a judge said it's okay to take the blood, but it overcomes the issues that the Missouri case had.
So it was all part of a cleanup that we had proposed last year that never got heard.
It is. And it also, when the DUI laws were written, that piece got missed.
Yeah, yeah.
But you still do implied consent for non-blood draws.
Correct. But we had that cleanup situation to address your problem as a part of the packet that, what's his name, from Spokane? Goodman didn't know, they didn't connect. Senate and the House never came together,
right?
So we never got it addressed.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened.
Okay. So is that something we need to go back and push for?
If something like that were to go forward, what I'm asking for is your permission to support it as a traffic safety commission.
Yes, we need it.
Mm-hmm. Are we hearing no objections?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
And I just want to add that when it comes to the distracted driving part and you need help, give me a call. I just got rear-ended by somebody on a cell phone.
Oh, no. I am so sorry.
No, I'm fine. And it wasn't, but I'm thinking, really? Put yourself away.
Yes.
So
you're willing to do an infomercial for us now?
Yes.
I'm Commissioner Dillon.
I would just add that the City of Spokane's legislative agenda that we're considering on Monday includes upgrading the distracted driving.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And let me know if there's something we can do to help you on.
Maybe we should do that.
Good job.
Thank you.
So if you would allow me, just a couple minutes.
Sure.
On the agenda is some of the results from PIRE that I've sent out to you. In sake of time, I'm going to push that off a little bit, but we did have 98% of the people that actually came in that actually participated in that. I wanted to let you know that originally they were going to come back 6 months after, so around December, January. We tried to tell them that weather really isn't good in January and December around here, and they were like, oh no, they called us and said, we're coming in November.
Oh.
So I wanted to make sure that you had all heard this. It's the first three weekends in November that they're coming back. The results that we got from that, they actually ran out of blood kits and alcohol swab kits, because for Washington State, we actually exceeded their expectations of how much response we were going to get. So, and a lot of it had to do, we've got Shelley and we had Jonna, who's not here today, who worked with the ACLU and all of you, and we worked with a lot of the Target Zero managers that worked with a lot of the local law enforcement in those respective counties that we worked in to be able to get those results. We're still waiting for kind of those levels. The THC, they said to me, you know, Darren, you have a really significant heroin problem out there. And we're like, okay, well, that just validates what we already know. But it gives us a little more as far as who's driving with those different types of levels. There was a lot of people in the surveys themselves, as far as many of them felt like they actually drove better after they had smoked some marijuana. The percentage of that was like
25.
25%. It's scary. And I was just in Missouri at their Blueprint conference. They do not have medical marijuana, and then but they are very concerned that there are some legislators that are trying to push that in the state of Missouri. One of the comments that came back to me from my counterpart was, there was a lady in the audience that said, I didn't think marijuana was that big of a deal. She says, but after his presentation, I'm scared to death. So I was like, yeah. So, but it's just, you know, one person. But ultimately is they're very concerned. All of the states are kind of rallying around this issue with marijuana because it is it's very problematic. And we need to start with the education piece, the enforcement piece, being able to show this does have a huge impact. And we've been dealing with it for a lot of years. But now because it's recreational is legalized, it's now on the forefront. So, but in sake of time, I wanted to just take a moment and recognize someone very special in this room. She's been with the commission since 2008. And on December 31st, 2014, she will no longer be a commissioner. And we wanted to say thank you very much for the last 6 years of working with us and the commission, kicking us when we needed to be kicked, and pushing us in areas. So on behalf of all of the staff, and I hope on behalf of all of the commissioners, we would like you to come on up. Mark, get your camera. So, as for me as the director, I'd like to present you with our traffic safety coin of traffic safety excellence, and for all that you do and continue to do in your position. So, thank you very much. Where's Mark?
Turn this way now.
Yeah, turn this way.
The red carpet treatment.
That's right.
I guess so. Thank you.
So now also on behalf of the commission is that this recognizes the Honorable Sharon D. Dillon for her excellent service promoting traffic safety 2008 to 2014. I've left the wrapping on because I have a tendency to scratch things and all kinds of things, so I wanted to make sure it was nice for you. So on behalf of that, you here.
So, you know, this is, I have to say, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed every single solitary moment of it. We've had to make some hard decisions, but we've had to make some fun decisions, too. And what I'm going to miss most is you. And, you know, staff, you hopefully know what an awesome staff you guys have that works under you and takes what we say seriously. So they're jewels. Hope you never lose any of them because they're great. But anyway, thank you all for this and just the pleasure of getting to know you all.
And if you could, just have all the commissioners and even your fill-ins, if you could just come up and we'll take one picture. So
I would love it. Ooh, that would be great. Mark, you got to send it to me.
Shall we? I'm going to have to see you.
It's been wonderful. We're going to have
a GPS. Yes, the back is the local.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we're going to cash your license. Okay, that would be great.
Huh?
Well, that would be great.
No, I know, but someone's sorry.
So he's got her asking for me 4 years.
We'll adjourn in just a second.
I misunderstood.
I should have had her adjourn, but we'll adjourn in just a minute.
I don't think it'll work for me to be.
I've learned.
All right. You ready? Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
We'll have you adjourn us. I'll turn the time back over to you, and you can adjourn us. I should have had you do that before. But
it's okay.
That was
my
You're in committee meeting?
Really? Okay. Well, I was thinking of my notes.
I'm actually, yeah. I'm doing that one.
Okay. So with that, again, thank you all. very much for mainly your friendship, but other than that, for these. And keep in touch. Please call me if you need my help, because I'm all over this one. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you. So second to the adjourn, so we are.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for staying over, too. This was great information.